Why?
I have no idea. Bryan Adams songs keep going through my head.
Where do you stand on Adams?
It's a great question. I don't...
I'm kind of torn on Adams.
On Bryan Adams?
Well, I'll tell you why. Whenever you ask me about Canadian artists,
yeah,
I immediately get a little bit of this. Mm-hmm. Because I was on the radio for 107 years.
32.
And I had to backsell that stuff for a lot of years. And our government, in their infinite wisdom, decided that they would do what they could to help promote Canadian music around the world by forcing terrestrial radio to play Canadian music ad nauseum to the point where it pissed everybody off in the country. And generally speaking, the mass majority of people hate Canadian music as a result. So I think CanCon at the beginning, in the inception, may have been a positive thing. But like many positive things, if you do it too much.
Yeah. If you force people to eat it, they won't want to eat it anymore. That's
it could
the benefit
be
of you not being on the radio. You don't have to play any more Canadian music. You never have to play another Rush song. You never have to play
Helix. I haven't played Rush for years.
You don't have to play Clark Nova. You don't have to play Honeymoon Suite. Give me some other shitty Canadian bands that we had to
Street
put
Heart
up. You don't have to play Limb Lifter. You don't have
dick.
You never have to listen to another Treble Charger song again. Dude, life is awesome.
If somebody gave me an option to go rebury Kenny Shields in Winnipeg, I might take him up on that. Like that'd be worth the drive. Let's go bury him
what
again.
What is the okay? Let's just start this off because we got hockey to get to.
Worst Canadian band for radio
worst
people.
Canadian band of all time. Like and Rush, like you have to combine success. Rush is out of there because as weird as it is to us, they're mega successful. They're a legendary band. So leave.
Can I
Rush
say this?
Worst
can I
Canadian
say this about Rush?
The reason why
I did the no Rush thing wasn't necessarily because I didn't appreciate the band and the talent of the band, right? I never got it.
Yeah.
But I realized early on in my radio career that it was a very polarizing band. So I chose to
is it because the lead singer can't sing? Is that why?
Yeah. And don't let bass players. What's the worst?
Worst Canadian band of all time? I'm going to have to go. Dude, listen. I've already got the band.
Worst. You can't say worst.
What commercially least viable, like the most offensive to my eardrums. Like when you listen to the band, you're like, how the fuck did anybody go? Yeah. People want to listen to that. Limb Lifter for me, it's Limb Lifter or Treble Charger. One of those two bands. And they're both kind of the same band. So if you were in both of those bands, if you were one of the three guys that was in Limb Lifter and Treble Charger, I don't know who you blew for a record deal, but that was one of the worst shit I've ever heard in my whole life. And I never want to hear it again. Like Ariel versus Lotus might be the worst Canadian. So it might be one of the worst rock and roll songs of all time. And the reason why you're not saying anything, because you've never heard it. And if you have heard it, you know exactly what I'm talking
about. I've heard it. I know
the worst bands of all time.
I'm trying to think if there's one that I hate. See, I spent a lot of time in the rock waters, like classic rock waters.
Yeah, but I don't
so
consider,
I'm
like,
having a hard time between Street Heart and,
Platinum Blonde
thing. That was kitschy though. That wasn't something that stuck around.
No, it was one of the worst bands of all time. It was like a high school
Glass
Canadian high
school Tiger
band. Up there.
Let's
up there,
not
but
go to sleep on Glass Tiger.
Yeah, well, might be one of the worst, but they were very commercially successful. And Alan Frew, lead singer of the band, nicest guy in the world. I know him.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. Like really good to get. So it's like, I got to leave them out because he was nice and they were pretty successful. Treble Charger, none of them were nice and they've never been successful and the music sucked. You got to hand it to them. That is the worst Canadian band in the history of Canadian.
Okay, did you ever interview Sum 41? I hated those little dicks.
Oh, they were a great band though, but
they were a pretty good band.
Yeah.
Also, Tyler from Theory of a Dead Man. Every time he came in, I just wanted to punch him.
Really?
I stopped asking. I started asking them to send the bass player, right? And when I was in Winnipeg, like they were on a bit of a heater, right? So they would come through town like every 3 months, as you do in Canada. And the record company would be like, all right, we got Todd already. Leave him in the van. Like, leave him in the...
Not interested.
He's the lead singer. I'm like, worst I don't interview. Care. He's worst a interview, dick.
Tyler, from Theory of a Dead Man. With me, it's Gene Simmons. It's not even a Canadian band.
Gene Simmons is a awful interview. He is... he is... Right out of the gates, confrontational. You can't talk about anything other than him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, he was disappointing to me.
Yeah, and I will never miss any parts. I will never miss any interview I don't want to do on the radio as we sit here and reminisce about your new job. You're 3 weeks into self-employment here at Cryer Media. You're not going to miss playing Canadian music, and you're definitely not going to miss playing Honeymoon Suite, Clark Nova, or Limb Lifter.
I love, there's a lot of Canadian bands I really love.
Them. Yeah. The Watchmen, one of my favorite Canadian
Watchmen. I love The Watchmen. Danny's a great guy, too. I love Danko
plays
Jones.
Mean harp. Plays a mean
Dank,
harp.
Yeah. Yeah. Danko Jones, loved. I was a big Hip fan, too. That's it. That band always had a very, very close spot in my heart.
Yeah, yeah, all Canadiana. Anyway, we've got lots to get to. Just a quick aside as we open up the show. You have a surprise to start the show?
Yeah, quick surprise, okay?
All right.
I got a gift from my wife. She's been listening. She's been listening to the show.
No way.
And she bought me this.
What's that for?
You hear that?
Yeah. Why?
You never listen to me, do you? How many times on this podcast have I said we need a bell?
I don't know, because I don't listen.
It's not a very good one. I don't think
terrible she bell.
She spent a lot of money on it, but there's something wrong with it.
What do we need the bell for again? Can you remind me?
When before we get someone to the makes a good program? Point, I've always been looking for a bell.
Ding,
all
ding,
right,
ding,
let's
ding,
move
ding.
On.
Oh, dude, we just have a
I
sound
thought you'd
effect,
be excited
though.
About it.
I am excited. You can still hit it. It just, I don't think you're using the bell properly. That's
I'm hitting the
boom. No, you got to take your finger off it. Hit it once. There you go. There
it's,
you go.
Yeah, it's a that's sensitive bell.
Yeah, well, no, it's just you're no good at using the handbell. You got to hit it and release it right away. See, if you keep your finger on it, it numbs the sound. There you go.
I'll get better at it. I'll work on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to figure it out. Anyway, nice to see you.
Yeah.
What do we have for people today? We got a full show, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to start with some hockey. We had a Leafs-Oilers tilt this weekend, so you're in Edmonton. I'm in Toronto. We're going to talk about that. Some of the fallout from it. Obviously, the highest-scoring Jew in NHL history, Zach Hyman, made history with his 50th. We'll get to that. And Ron McLean took a beating this weekend.
Did he?
Got some of that. Yeah, and Donald Trump's going broke today. Today, they're seizing some assets. So, lots of stuff to laugh at. You tried to get me going before the game this weekend, and I could care less, by the way. Like, I don't care who wins between the Oilers and the Leafs.
No, I just asked if you were going to watch the game.
Yeah, and then you point out that Justin Trudeau. I got Justin Trudeau on the brain. Zach Hyman might get his 50th. And then
48
I started
going into the game.
Yeah. I started looking into it, and sure enough, Zach Hyman –
yeah,
scores his 50th on the weekend, right, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was a big deal.
No, no, no.
49th?
He scored his 49th in – I really wanted him to score 50 in Toronto because of how excited Leaf fans were when Matthews got 50 last year. So I thought – and you guys let Hyman go,
mm-hmm.
and then he comes to Edmonton, and he's just – he's all world. He's the best midseason pickup in the history of the game.
Like, he was a UFA.
Off-season UFA. He's the best UFA this league has ever seen.
Without question.
It's not even a question. And he came from the Leafs. Mm-hmm. So I wanted him to get his 50th on Saturday night during Hockey Night in Canada. And then, Edmonton completely
shat the bed
for the first two periods. They got a little Toronto disease right now. They can't finish.
Yeah, well.
Lost last night, too, against Ottawa.
Yeah, they did. Not a team you want to lose to down the stretch. But what are you, 42-23 now or something like that? Or 42-21? Still a pretty good team after coming out of the gate. All shit. Both good teams. It was a great game. If you watched the
it
game,
was
it
game.
Indicative of the score? 6-3, nice game.
Samsonov, somebody had a little whisper in his ear and said, hey, play goal tonight.
Yeah, you got to get in between the puck and the net. He's like,
pay attention for the whole game.
Great game. Really enjoyed it. You and I chirped a little bit after the game.
Mm-hmm.
I am shocked at the hatred Ron McLean gets. I know we talk about this on, you know, Mondays, Tuesdays, sometimes.
Can I ask you a question before we get into the Ron thing?
Yeah.
Because is it acceptable for me to say this line? And I don't know, because I'm sort of removed from it a bit, but it just sounds off. Zach Hyman, the highest scoring Jew of all time, in it just seems harsh. Is Jew an acceptable term? Because my wife said to me last night at dinner, she said that I think you can say that if you are Jewish, but if you're not Jewish,
you got to
using the shortened version of it can be deemed offensive. And I was like, I said, I'll ask Dean about that, but I'm not positive on that one.
Let me just point out can I point out the irony in you asking Dean about political correctness, anything? I think that's incredible. I think you either need more help or I've come a long way. I think that's really neat.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know. Sometimes I'm unaware of the proper vernacular. My daughter is dating a young man who is half Puerto Rican and half black. Beautiful looking kid. Like he's gorgeous. They're going to have unbelievable babies when they get married. Mm-hmm. We get into situations with conversations with him on FaceTime where I get the sideways eye on how I reference stuff. And so I'm in this learning phase, even at the age of 50 plus, because things, you know, the bar moves a bit, right? Over time.
Oh, yeah. You can get in trouble for things that people did 200 years ago now. That's the way we are. Yeah, that's the progressive left.
And I have everybody on an equal playing field, but I also want to use the proper terminology, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and your wife sent a little shockwave into you this weekend because the word Jew just sounds terrible, right?
It does sound like an offensive term, but I hear people use it all the time in reference to identifying their their lineage, their heritage,
their religious upbringing.
Maybe if I'm Mark Maron, I can call myself that, but maybe it's an offensive term if you're not, and I say, hey, Mark Maron is this
Jewish.
Or
a Jew. Great question. I don't know.
Somebody watching this may be able to tell us.
Hopefully, yeah. I grew up with the idea that word, if uttered by someone who wasn't Jewish, very similar to the N-word, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's how I grew up. That's kind of where my head is at. But over the past couple of weeks, with Zach Hyman being
greatest
free agency, I've seen it used in terms and in ways where you're like, okay, does that? Okay, hang on. Does that really matter? Because it's a religious, cultural statement, right? Where you're like, that is the highest scoring. And I've seen this hundreds of times on social media because Zach Hyman's been having a terrific year. And let me just say this. He's one of the most upstanding NHLers in the history of the NHL.
He's such a good kid.
Incredibly kind individual, nice person, great guy.
Whole team loves him. When he scored his 50th last night, the whole team went nuts.
Yeah, went nuts because he writes kids' books. He donates money to charities. He's just a family guy. He's just salt of the earth. Anyway, everybody, as he's ascending to be the greatest UFA in the history of UFAs, and he's having this incredible year, it's like and I saw it like 3 weeks ago, there may be a chance he becomes the highest scoring Jew in the history of the NHL. And I'm like, and when I read it, I was like, whoa. You know what I mean?
Where you're like, off.
And you don't know what to say. You're looking around. You're like, okay, well, I grew up thinking that was a bad thing to say. And then I looked at the account. It was like Jews in Hockey or something like that. It's this account that celebrates great hockey playing Jewish people. The Hughes brothers, Quinn, Luke, and Jack Hughes. The three incredible standout Hughes brothers that play in the NHL. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know they were Jewish. That's, I guess, cool or whatever. And as much as it is that, you know, we learn that another player is Catholic or that guy's Mormon or that guy grew up a Jehovah's Witness, I just don't understand and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this.
The identifying of that and the significance.
As important to the fact that he scored 50 goals.
Here, I can settle that for you.
In any religious capacity. I don't see why anybody has to drag in the hereditary religion of anybody when it comes to any kind of physical accomplishment that has nothing to do with their religion. Unless, of course, those religions were oppressed, which, of course, Jews have been oppressed for thousands of years. So
that doesn't sound bad. When I saw the highest scoring.
Yeah.
Right. It does feels off. Anyway, somebody's going to sort us out. Send me a tweet. Here, I'll sort you out on the identifying Zach Hyman as Jewish in the league and celebrating where he's at scoring race comparatively speaking to other Jewish players.
I think it's great. I just don't know the rules of the road when it comes to, okay, if this matters, tell me why.
Okay, and I'll tell you why.
Because of the oppression of the people for thousands of years.
I'll tell you why. Yeah. And again, this isn't I'm not belittling the Jewish faith by suggesting this, but I had a similar moment this weekend when you and I talked about the fact that we were going to dig into this conversation on the podcast today. Mm-hmm. Here's my thought behind it. Cause I started to think I don't really identify with any religion at all. Never have my entire life, unless being a hippie is a religion. And then I didn't really identify as a hippie either. I sort of railed against that when I was a kid, cause I was raised by hippies. So you kind of rail against what your upbringing is a bit. Sometimes you rebel against it. And that's what I did. I kind of rebelled against the fact that my parents were crazy hippies, and they were. But I identify as a Canadian. And if somebody asked me what I was, I would say, well, I'm Canadian, and I actually have pride in being a Canadian. Still to this day, regardless of politics, I am a Canadian. And if somebody, said, hey, what are you doing in Canada today? I would I'm going to wear a damn flag and I'm going to go out and I'm going to see the fire. I identify as a Canadian, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think it's a similar thing with other cultures. If you come to Canada, maybe you're proud to be from here, but maybe you came from Ireland and you probably go out on St. Patrick's Day and celebrate. I think it's a similar, not the same thing, but I think it's similar. And I think it's okay to consider yourself part of a group. Same thing with sports teams, right? Like if you have a favorite soccer team, you might not even live in Manchester, but you cheer for the team from Manchester and you wear you buy the kit every year. I think it's similar. People are taking pride in Zach Hyman's heritage because of his success, and I don't think it's a bad thing. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I just was like,
I think we get a little twitchy religion's involved.
Yeah,
everyone's a little twitchy.
I do, and then there's the racial implications of it too, where you're like, hey, hang on. And then, of course, what's going on in the world, anti-Semitism being what it is, right? Maybe. That's the thing. Maybe that's the pushback. I don't have a problem with it. It came out of left field when I started reading it. I'm just been inundated with not that he's one of the greatest free agent signings in the history of the NHL, and he's having a world beating season, and he's an incredible individual. He also happens to be Jewish. And I think that that's a great narrative. It just is one of those things that warrants a conversation, especially now. Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I think also, that the league is also kind of encouraging this because of the lack of diversity in the NHL as a whole. It's a pretty prairie white boy league, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Generally speaking.
If you're going to do religious play-by-play, it's Christian to a Christian, over to another Christian, over to an atheist. Boom, he scores.
Yeah.
And then you mix in over Christian. Oh, over to a Jew. Jew pots it for his 50th.
I did get a chuckle
and
out of the one tweet.
The Gentile goalie celebrates. What's that?
The one tweet when he did break the record. Yeah. And it was and Hyman in the same tweet.
Oh.
I did get a chuckle out of that.
Hyman breaks.
My wife, she's a big hockey fan, and we watched the games together.
We're still six. It's like the little things of that whole thing. It was like, oh, that Hyman breaks. Whatever.
But it doesn't matter. I can tell you why I didn't feel so bad about laughing about that, because my wife, there was a conversation about maybe getting her an Oilers jersey because she's a big fan, mm-hmm. right? We've been watching the games this year and the team's doing well.
Yeah.
So the girls are contacting me and that we're texting back and forth about what player to get her, what jersey. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, she really likes Zach Hyman, but I don't think she wants that on a jersey. So let's go with her second favorite player. She's a big fan of Nuge. So she might be getting a 93.
She's going to get a Nuge 93. We'll just go get a McDavid, whatever. We just got a McJesus. Or a Draisaitl. Does she like Draisaitl?
Both
Draisaitl chick?
Both McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah.
Drive my wife crazy.
Oh, really?
Well, there's Draisaitl has moments where he's trying to force things, right?
She watches that close. I really like Draisaitl, but he forces the play too much. So I don't want his jersey.
And McDavid sometimes is a little lax in defense. So yeah, she likes the all-round players. She likes the workers. She likes Hyman. She likes Nuge.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, they can put...
Get her a Hyman jersey. Get her a Hyman jersey.
I don't think she wants a Hyman jersey. That's all I'm saying.
Like, it doesn't matter what she wants.
It does make us look a little like six-year-olds. I'll live with that. But
before we move on from hockey, again, I like Ron McLean.
I think he's a
good person.
One of my favorite interviews of all times was with Ron McLean.
Happiest guy in the world. He's always given 110% every time he's on an interview, every time I've spoken to him, every time I talk to him. He's always smiling. He's always happy. He's a very nice man. Bullets this weekend, and I finally get why. I'm going to play a video for you, and I want you to pay special attention. I love Ron. I do. But at some point in time, it's like Tom Brady, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan. At some point, everybody has to go, I'm looking around and nothing looks overly familiar to me anymore. And I don't know.
The best thing to happen to that Hockey Night in Canada panel, though, is Bieksa. He's awesome. I love Bieksa. He's great.
I do too. I think he's one of the greats.
That whole panel when they did the shift to Sportsnet took a beating, right?
Oh, well, because you know,
and the George Stromanopoulos thing, that was
that wasn't great. Good guy. I like George. He's got a nice little music thing. Yeah. But you know what happened is somewhere along the way, Spittin' Chiclets, this little podcast with Ryan Whitney and Biz Nasty, became the culture of hockey worldwide. So Kevin Bieksa enters the fray. People identify with him. It appeals to a younger demo.
He's just totally real. Yeah.
It's the same thing with Luke Gadzik, who was on the panel on this weekend with Jennifer Botterill. Say what you like about him. He's of that demographic. He's a certain age where he talks differently. He feels like he connects with people differently. Ron is from the 50s. I do too. Ron's from the 50s and 60s, right? So Ron is used to dragging up like poetry references from the Group of Seven.
I'm okay.
Talking
with it.
About Bill Barilko. I'm okay with it. Talking about shit that happened in the 70s and 80s. And the rest of hockey has moved on largely in thanks to the guys like Spittin' Chiclets.
Everyone stopped reading.
Because everybody stopped reading. The classics are no longer the classics.
You know what? Ron can't even make hip lyric references anymore.
No, he can't.
No, because you're going to lose guys. If you're pulling something off of Trouble at the Hen House, you're in trouble with the audience, Ron.
You're in trouble. Every reference he makes is... not just Margaret dated, Atwood. It's from like the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, right? So everybody's looking around and like, what the fuck? Like, I'll get to the clip that
he's
made
the
everybody...
Gordon Lightfoot of hockey.
I'll get to the clip that made the entire panel go, what the fuck? But this is the panel's face as Ron is making a reference to a look at him. Luke Gadzik's laughing. There's Ron. There's Jennifer going, I don't even know what he's fucking talking about. There's Jennifer again looking at the camera. There's Ron going into this question. And again, here's Luke and Bieksa looking at Ron.
Bieksa's trying to find a way to make fun of him.
That's the thing is that they just do it on the show now. If you watch Hockey Night,
it's awesome. I love it. It's
found humor.
So refreshing. I can watch Hockey Night in Canada now.
Totally.
It's good. Yeah. So fun at Ron for being old. Do it.
So Ron, he's so old. Ron has a decision to make at some point. And everybody in certain demographics and jobs has this decision to make. Am I too old? Has the rest of this world passed me by? You can judge for yourself. Bobby McMahon, who had a hell of a night on the weekend against your Oilers. He had a couple goals in an apple, 3 points. He's a fourth line grinder. He's from Wainwright, Alberta.
He's a nice pickup.
He's a nice little player. He's from Wainwright, Alberta. Your neck of the woods. And another person from Wainwright, Glenn Sather, who happens to be 140,000 years old. and he tries to connect with him on the Wainwright theory around Glenn Sather, not Glenn Sather, Glenn Sather's mom's dress shop in the 30s and 40s in Wainwright, and asked Bobby McMahon, "This was so- have you ever been there?"
"You're too young. You can't know, Bobby, but Glenn Sather's mom had a shop in Wainwright. It was a dress. You know this? You know that Glenn Sather has a history there?"
No, I don't know that history.
"Well, you know, he's the king of swagger. And you just demonstrated you're cut from the same cloth as mom and all the beautiful dresses that she used to do. That's why Glenn was such a great, you know, haberdasher, and he could always look the best of any player. Great game tonight."
"Thanks, man. Appreciate it."
Everyone in the room is like, "What are you doing? You stop. We all know what you were trying to do, Ron." Just
did you see Bobby McMahon's face? He's like, "No,
I have no idea what you're talking about."
"I know. Did you hear what he said?" He's like, "I literally didn't know it."
Not only that, like, I mean, that kid, years ago, dude. That kid spent like no time in Wainwright, and all he thought about was
probably history class.
Yeah.
Poor Ron. Just a beating. People are laughing, recording him doing his best job now. Like, at some point, you guys.
I still like Ron.
I do too.
I still like him, and there's a spot for him. There's a spot for him as long as his people can see the humor in it, and he's got humility. He can laugh at himself, right? You see what he's doing,
man.
There, though, right? Like, Glenn Sanders.
And I'm stuck well-dressed. Because I like him so much. Right?
He dress shop. You had a good night. The kid had a good night. Looked good on the ice.
Hey, Bobby, 3-point night. Glenn Sather's mom used to own a dress shop in your hometown. Remember that? No, actually, I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about.
We criticize all these hockey players for being meatheads and having meathead answers. And then you're dressing down a guy that's trying to put some class into the broadcast.
As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter. If it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources, and there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today, FACTCHEK.io, FACTCHEK.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FACTCHEK.io. The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by factcheck.io. Factcheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter. If it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FACTCHEK. .io. Back to the show.
Podcast with an excellent reference to that kid's hometown.
Sure. Yeah.
Excellent. You're the problem.
So I'm the problem.
You're the problem. It's not reference. Not old man Ron.
1944. That guy's dad wasn't born until the 60s, until 20 years after Glenn Sather's mom opened up Sather's dress shop. And he's like, "Do you know that, Bobby?"
No idea what you're talking about.
Oh,
I'm okay with
that. And then he called him a haberdasher. Like,
That's a connection to the clothing.
You're a real haberdash out there, you say? You should just start talking like this the whole time.
Did
We're
Kevin
by Bobby McMahon, you say? Number 74 for those.
They were kind of laughing. They were kind of laughing at Ron, right? They were kind of, but did they? I saw that clip, but I missed that part in the broadcast. I think I was running downstairs to get a beer. Look at Bieksa.
Look at Bieksa's face.
He's like, just disgusted.
Are you kidding me? Are we really doing this again?
Ron, really? I'm trying not to bring up that you smell funny too, right? Like you got that old man smell. Please stop doing this. Because it's going to be full. Kevin's just sitting there trying to locker room it up.
Quick pivot, by the way. Speaking of out of touch, today's the day, dude. You know that, right? Today's the day.
I watched Trump's entrance into the courthouse. So they're deciding whether or not they're going to, when they're going to trial for the hush money.
Stormy Daniels, that's next. Yeah, I mean, but who knows what trial is next?
Also, yeah, no one's paying attention anymore. Everyone's given up. But this is the big part. The civil fraud case against Carroll, right?
Yeah. He's supposed to pay a bond today. So just to give everybody a quick heads up, today is the deadline for Donald Trump to ante up $454 million in a judgment he lost against a E. Jean Carroll rape defamation case, which he lost in spades after talking about how rich he was. So they set the price at $454 million. He is dead ass broke. Dead ass.
But he keeps telling everybody he's got the money, which goes against... It works this against you in court.
Yeah, right. Any public statement you make, they'll hold you to it as if it is true, right? So what he did, to your point, is for the last 2 years when he was being sued, he would go, "I'm worth billions, bitch. I got billion in the bank."
They kept
"Did you say this?" He goes, "That's right, bitch. I'm rich." And they'd be like, "Okay, well, good. You're $454 million." He's like, "I don't have that kind of money.
What are you talking about? I can't pay that."
So anyway, the assessment $454. He now is owed around $460. Today's the day. He cannot at all. Like, he legit, dude, cannot get a loan to put
up. So they're playing Monopoly with his businesses in New York.
Yes. Today on the auction block for Donald Trump.
House is calling.
Silver Springs Golf and Country Club in just outside of Manhattan. Lovely little place. Mar-a-Lago may be up for grabs as well today, if indeed there is any connection.
Whether or not they can get stuff out of the state?
Yeah, they can get anything. If they've got an agreement with the other state, New York has agreements with almost every other state to be able to seize items in financial transactions. Yes, correct. Okay. So they could take Mar-a-Lago today. And you know what he's doing today? I'm going to play this for you. He's begging for money. Watch this.
Probably asking if you could chip in $5, $10, or even $25. I know that times could be tough, and they are tough under this horrible president that we have, crooked Joe Biden.
$5, $10, or $20.
That guy's
been reduced to begging for $5, $10, or $20 today. So Letitia James is going to collect on those seized properties. He is out of time. Today is the day, 5 p.m. If he does not file and hand over a check for $462 million with interest, 662, that's the 462, to the New York State Attorney's Office at 5 p.m. Eastern time today, bailiffs are going to walk into either 2 to 7 Trump properties, including Trump Tower, which is worth $371 million, and they are going to change the locks, kick everybody out, and they are going to take possession of between 2 and 7 Trump properties. And Trump is now considered broke. And how broke is he right now? This is great. He is so broke, even his own staff are calling him Don Corleone.
No way.
And it is a hashtag that is trending, and he is losing his fucking mind on Truth Social right now. Says everybody's out to get him. Everything's rigged. Of course, everything's rigged.
Witch
it's
hunt.
All rigged.
It's a witch all hunt, Dean.
It's a witch hunt. Can't believe it's happening to me. And today you're going to find out at 5 o'clock. Like, I'm done saying, oh, this is what's going to happen. I'm just looking forward to 5 o'clock today, Locke. That's all I care about. I want to see what they take, if they take. I want to see the Truth Social tweets. I want to watch.
Are we
going to
get video of that?
Yeah, dude. I think we are. I think we're going to get video of people and bailiffs walking into. Yeah, I do. I think we're going to get that. I think we're going to get that today. I really, really do.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's say you're at the bailiff's office.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're at work on Monday, and everyone knows that you're going to collect Trump properties. Mm-hmm. How excited are you
pumped
for your job today?
So excited. If you're a repo guy and you get a Trump file put on your fucking desk.
Okay, I'm going to steal something.
I'm
going to pocket, like, I don't know, just something.
Yeah. Anything. Doesn't matter. Something out of the gift shop. Maybe something out of Donald's private suite. Right. Maybe the strap on that Melania uses to peg him at night. Who knows? The golden strap on for pegging. No one knows. But I want to play this for you because I find this, or I want to show this to you. He is not only losing his mind this weekend. Donald Trump claimed at the age of 77, I'm a golfer. We're going to go through this, to have had a big weekend outside of, you know, fighting the rigged world. He says that he won the senior and club championship at his golf club. So both of them. He's the senior club champion and he's the men's open club champion at Mar-a-Lago and Trump National Golf Course, which apparently happened this weekend. This is what he put up. Joe Biden's already commented. Congratulations, Donald. Quite the accomplishment. Just keep in mind, this is a 77-year-old guy.
You know.
It is my great honor to be at Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach tonight, awards night. This is what's important to this old fuck. To receive the club championship trophy and the senior club championship trophy, quote, I won both. A large and golfing talented membership. It doesn't make any sense. A great and difficult course made the play very exciting. The qualifying match and play was amazing. Large and distinguished group will be there tonight. Very exciting. Thank you. This guy is under 91 criminal indictments. He's having his property seized today. And this was his big announcement.
Let's take a step back from this, Dean.
A lie that he won the senior championship.
Men's
championship. He was low man in both. And let me say you this. As someone who has competed in the men's club championship as a scratch golfer and came in 13th when I was really good at the game, there is no fucking way he won either of those. None. Anyway, okay. You want to take a step back and then I've got a video.
Let's just say, okay, yeah, just for shits and giggles.
All right.
Let's say that we believe that. And listen, I'm not saying I do. Let's just say, let's suspend reality for a moment.
Yeah.
And let's say that he actually did win. Okay. How remarkable is it that that man, with everything happening in his life, is able to perform on the golf course? Like, seriously.
How remarkable is it that he could actually golf?
Like, I've got some stuff going on in my life. But, I mean, when you take a step back and you really start to compare what's happening to you and your life,
yeah,
and compare it to what other people are going through in the world. And I'm not suggesting that Donald Trump has anything to, you know, freak out about, right? Because he brought it all on himself. But the guy, any human being, would be wildly stressed out about the circumstances that he's dealing with day to day. And the fact that he can
operate
golf shoes and grab a 9-iron and head out and have a half decent round is kind of an
impressive
of how remarkable of a psychopath he is. Like, he might be one of the most
disassociated individuals you've ever seen in your entire life. How he can separate literally, like, being a seditious traitor charged with 91 crimes, the kind of stuff most people get put to death for, the fact that he's up against it, the fact that he's broke, the fact that the entire world is onto him and knows that he is legitimately the Manchurian candidate.
And still takes time to lie about his weekend golf course. is kind of remarkable.
It's kind of impressive, isn't it?
When
you think about it. He's not like there isn't a human being on the planet that I know that could deal with 1/100th of that stress and go, you know what? Let's go play some golf. See how it goes. You know what? I'm the winner of both. I won the senior and the men's today. I'm just going to tell everybody that. And you know what's really important to me? Like in the list of priorities in that man's life right now that we're aware of, you know what took center stage? Him telling everybody that he's the best golfer in his club and there will be lots of people there to congratulate him. That was that important to him, Locke. I'm not kidding you. That was what we just were like. And if that doesn't tell you the story of this guy on a day where he's going to lose everything and people are calling him Don Corleone and he's asking people to stop calling me that. Literally on Truth Social all day. Stop calling me Don Corleone. I'm rich, bitch. He's not. He's got nothing. He's got absolutely nothing left. If that doesn't tell you the story, maybe this video will. This is a video of Donald golfing in his club championship on the weekend. Now, if he shot a 70, which he said he shot, with a Hazel rocket like this, I'll be shocked. Because I want you to watch. This is Donald Trump in his club championship rifling a shot 5,000 yards to the right. Let's watch this.
Trump's shooting right now.
There we go. There's tons of fun. Lines up a little pitch, just a little chip and run. He's going to throw to the green. Backstop and backswing quick. Oh way shit. Right into the trap.
Oh my God, I got that on video.
Toe wedge.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a toe wedge. All right. Yeah, that is everything he does is a lie. I'm fucking. Dude, everything that guy has ever said is garbage, and today is one of those little markers, little D-days, which we get to enjoy. So
you know the sad part about it, and I've mentioned this before, the sad part about this whole Trump phenomenon, and you know what? Every time we end up talking about Trump, I'm always sort of... I struggle with this because I have a feeling, Dean, that we are going to be this guy, whether you like him or not, is a phenomenon. He truly is.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to be talking about him for the rest of history. Like in 200 years, there's going to be courses in universities about this a-hole.
Yeah.
And his impact on the world, this tool. This tool is going to be talked about for the rest of mankind.
There will be courses on him. He will be part of academia. People trying to understand him from a psychological point, from a political perspective.
How sad is that?
It's this incredible.
This tool.
Yeah.
They're going to be talking about him, and they're going to be trying to figure out why for hundreds of years. It's not something that's just baffling us. It's going to baffle mankind. They're going to look back at us and judge us as a society. And I'm talking to everybody, not just Americans. They're going to judge us all based on our obsession with this tool.
You know, to your point, and it's an excellent point. I've tweeted this before with videos like this, where literally like his hardcore supporters are just caught in the wild. And to your point, let's watch this together. Video of these guys in white beaters and cowboy boots and like morons. Meal Team 6, otherwise known as. And I've said this before. I was always fascinated as a kid because my grandparents grew up fighting in World War II. And they would tell me stories about it. I'm like, okay, so explain to me then. Here's the real question I have at like 7, 8, 9 years old. This is like 40 years ago. How is it an entire country lost their mind back from like 1929, 1930 to 1944? How is it an entire country 14 years was like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, sounds great. Let's do that with him. And I finally get it. I finally get it. It's the consistent ginning up groups of people and having a guy like that who's like, I'll do anything for money. Point me in the right direction. I'll do whatever you want. Special interest, do whatever you want. And I finally get it. And I see it in Canada. I see it everywhere. And none of it bothers me, but I finally understand it. To your point, we will be studying how and why this man was able to capture so much power, was able to capture so much imagination, was able to keep people so stupid, was able to keep people so motivated to do so many terrible things on behalf of so many other people, that we'll be breaking this down for millennia. Millennia, to your point. And it's a great point.
And when we have moments where we talk about specific things, not just like this 1,000-foot view and 200 years from now, I also, like, I'm sorry, if I'm a member of Mar-a-Lago, okay, and I'm playing in the weekend club championship, and I know that fat dick didn't win, I'm not sitting in that crowd keeping quiet. I'm sorry, and maybe that's on me, but there's no way I'm going to let him walk up there and grab that trophy without me letting him know that I know that he's full of shit.
That he cheated.
And that, like, that's the thing that I'm blown away by, that he gets away with it. He just continues to get away with it. Why do people let him get away with it?
Because he's got money and he's got power. And if I was a member at Mar-a-Lago and it's like, hey, this is a foregone conclusion. It is a well-known fact, if you remember Mar-a-Lago, that everybody golfs for second place. Trump cheats. His caddies help him cheat. Everybody that golfs with him is there to help him cheat, help him massage his score. They pick up, like, you know what a gimme is, right? Where it's, you know, your putt is so close to the hole, it's academic. No point in putting it. Usually 2-6 inches of mulligan. His gimmies are like 12 feet long, apparently. Guys just pick up the ball and go, ah, you would have made that. He's like, of course I would have. Right? Or they pick it up on the eighth and go, it would have gone in. You would have chipped it in because you're Donald Trump.
Couldn't do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I know. I couldn't either.
Maybe those guys just lose their memberships.
And you know, you golf with those guys too. You ever golf with like an adult cheater? Like someone who's like, oh, I found it. And you're like, there's no way you fucking found it. Oh, yeah, put me down for a 5. No, I counted. You got 7. And you don't want to count their score because you feel like a cheap ass when you're golfing with somebody.
It's weak.
He's that guy. He's that guy that nobody wants to golf with, but he's him. And so they have to golf with
him. I can name 3 or 4 guys right now.
Yeah, me too.
Just that it's I will never golf with just because...
Dave Spilo, number one. No, he doesn't cheat. He's a good buddy of mine. Andrew Menkop totally cheats. Scotty Stevenson, cheater. No.
Who's cheating? Who's cheating a golf? If I do it, I tell everybody.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm not taking that drive. It's a mulligan. Yeah, like, I never cheat though. I can't. I play with guys that, like, you know, your golf ball will be on a pile of raccoon shit, and they're like, you can't replace it. You're gonna have to hit it from the wreck.
Oh, see, I'm a little looser. I'm a little looser with the rules.
So is Don. He's widely known,
but I'm not playing for money.
He's widely known for something called the hand wedge. By the way, Donald Trump, where he would pick up his ball in the golf trap and he would just throw it towards the hole. When he thought people weren't looking.
I used to play with this guy that used to put the marker down, right?
Yeah, and he'd move it.
And yeah, but he had a move. I'm trying to remember. Hank, he had a move where he would get 6, 7, 8, 12 inches out of just his replacement of the ball on the greens. And I remember catching him on like the 10th hole or something, one round. I'm like, hey,
that's not where you marked your ball.
Not the whole day. Then he celebrates the fact that he got away with it for the first 9 holes.
I like to take those cheaters as like a really great little trick. When you know that a dude's a cheater and he hits his ball into the rough or the fescue or the woods, and you're like, what are you playing? And he goes, Titleist. And you're like, oh, no, it's a Max Fly. Sorry. Or you go,
you know what
are you playing?
And he goes,
what ball is it? And you're like, it's a Top Flight. And he's like, that's it. And he's like, No, that's not it. This wasn't what I was playing. I go, no.
I saw an ad, and I don't know if it's a real thing, but I saw an ad for a contraption where you can put an extra ball in the hole in your leg. And then it attaches. You got something in your pocket where you pull it up and it releases the ball down by your
down foot. Like a tube, and it goes down your pant leg and it goes out.
I don't know if that's real, but I did see it. I saw like a TikTok video of it. I'm like, that's brilliant.
If you cheat at golf, or if you lie about things that nobody cares about, you're a terrible person. Like listen, I don't. And I'm telling you the truth. Like, there will be people that I'm like, oh, what a great guy. They're like, yeah, he cheats at golf. I'm like, what a terrible individual. If I find out that someone cheats at golf, that is when I'm like, I have zero desire to be that person's friend. Because to me, that person's just trying to look cool, be cool, feel better than whoever he's with. And it's so unrealistic. You're like, if you cheat at golf, something so simple, if you lie about something that's supposed to be fun and challenging.
See.
Well, I know I'm good. But that's because
I'm not good.
That's because I never cheated. I got my ass kicked by my dad once cheating on one golf hole when I was in like the fifth grade. Took me into the bushes and whooped my ass. He goes, if I ever catch you cheating at this game again, you're never golfing with me again. I'm like, yeah, no problem, because I can't walk, dude. That's awesome. I learned my lesson. So every time I was like challenged to cheat, I'm like, I just remember my ass being on fire from getting a licking in the woods because I cheated on a par three with my dad. So that cured me right away. And now it's a great tell for the quality of the individual that you're golfing with. If they cheat, they're probably a serial killer.
I don't necessarily cheat. I would even go a step further,
and I would say if someone cheats regularly at golf, they might be into some. You might want to check their browser history.
Okay, listen, all this might be true, and yes, I will admit to taking liberties with the rules of golf. I have a club in my bag that when I pull it out in front of really good golfers, they get on me right away. It's like a chipping putter. Have you seen those? And you can't use them.
Chipping putter. No, they're illegal.
Yeah. The greens. If I'm literally 8, 9, 10 feet away from the green, it's awesome. Right. And I'll use that.
But you're not a pro. Who cares?
That's my line. That's my line. I'm
not a pro.
Yeah. What point did you think you were golfing with Tiger? Like, that's what I'll usually say. So I usually get away with it.
That's not cheating. No, I'm talking about like hitting your ball into the woods, pretending you found it.
I don't do that.
You 4 to get on the green, 2 to putt in, and you go, I got a par.
Yeah.
Like, that's par. That's
Donald Trump. Write me down for a par. I have literally golfed with a guy like that. And I golfed with him one time.
It's so distracting.
It was so bothersome. What do you got? What do you got? And he's like, 5. I'm like, 5. I literally hit you. You hit 5 off the tee.
You know what I do with those guys? Just a quick aside, and then we'll wrap up and get to the locker room retro replay of the day. Courtesy of our friends at Ardent Roof Systems, ardentroofsystems.com. You know what I do with those guys is I keep their score. And so they can tell me whatever they want. I just end up counting their score every single hole. So at the end of the round, they're like, it was 2 over, 3 over. I go, no, you shot a 56 on the front 9 and a 51 on the back. That's impossible. No, it's not, because I counted every one of your strokes. So here you go. And it's exhausting though, right? But I'm that guy. I'm like, no, one in the woods, drop 2.
Of course you are that guy.
Chunk 4, hit it in the woods for 5, on the green in 6, 2 putt. That's an 8.
So you're,
and he's like, no, it's not. It's a 6. I'm like, it's an 8. No, I counted. Let's count together. And they're like, I'm never golfing with you again. And I'm like, problem solved. Anyway, time for the locker room retro replay of the day, brought to you by Ardent Roofing Systems. Lachlan, what do we have today?
Okay. Today is Monday.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a very interesting week on the Dean Blundell Show. With Lachlan Cross, for whatever reason, stars have aligned, and we are going to have some very interesting individuals on the show. Later in the week, you're going to meet a wrestler that is in his 50s. I believe we're the exact same age. His name is Massive Damage, and he is the promoter and founder of Monster Pro Wrestling in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Okay. Massive is, Well, I'll leave it for Thursday. He's going to be on the show. He's promoting an event he has coming up next week with, by the way, from the locker room, James P. White. And if you're in the Edmonton area or even close, you have to come and see one of these events. Actually, you can send me a note now. I'll get you on a guest list. I've got a locker room guest list for the show. And then on Friday, we're going to meet two guys that I'm going to be doing a show with called Grease Fire. And these two individuals are very unique individuals as well. And through the course of the locker room, we had numerous people that would come and go. And so this week, I'm going to be introducing you to some very interesting locker room characters, people that we met on the show that would call in on a regular basis, or we became like, they became characters on the show. Mm-hmm. And this guy, he is an interesting duck. He is, he's a Greek. He's a heavy drinker. He lived up in Cold Lake for years and he moved to Edmonton. And I've been hearing from him. I think he started calling me when I was at the Bear, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, and he would call us. What's that?
Is he still alive?
Bill, yeah. Some of the people we are going to, that we're going to, you know, highlight this week are actually dead. Phil, I believe, is alive. Anyway, so we took clips from Phil and he would call. Every couple of weeks, or sometimes like he'd get on a heater and he calls like every day, and we turned it into advice from Phil. So I'm not going to play it all, but this is a montage of advice from Phil, the locker room retro replay of the day, brought to you by Ardent Roof Systems.
The locker room retro replay.
And now it's time for advice from Phil.
Not a problem if you live alone, you drink alone, and you can handle any situation when you go out. And I drink 20 beers, average 20 beers a day.
Not bad.
And that's not bad. Yeah, at 6.1%. And basically, yeah, nobody.
What do you drink? What, Phil, what do you drink?
Black ice, bud. It tastes like paint thinner.
And now, advice from Phil.
Do what you enjoy and don't what you don't, right?
That's right.
And now, advice from Phil.
I drink on the job. Off already. So I said deliver pizza and sell dope and drink, okay?
And now, advice from Phil.
Listen, if you're going to gamble...
Yeah.
Don't gamble more than you want to lose. And if you don't win double... What am I going to say here? If you don't win double,
yeah,
it's double or nothing. If you, whatever you put in, don't walk away unless you walk away with double.
Okay, that's good advice.
Well, yeah, well, that's my problem, right?
And now, advice from Phil.
Pot needs to sleep and sweat.
Okay. Before what, Phil?
You run through the jungle, man.
And now, advice from Phil.
Hi, man.
Phil! Are you on TikTok?
No, buddy. That's why I don't have a cell phone, a computer, or call. And I deal with cash, and I don't need to leave a paper trail, so no one can know where I am, who I am, or what I do. And I'll tell you something, man. We are being watched. So be careful of what you say and do.
Yeah.
Be safe, man.
And now, advice from Phil.
Okay, listen. I don't sit there and count my beer. I do.
I count my beer. When I'm drinking on a Friday, I count my beer.
No, what I do is the day before, I count before how many I have left, and the next day I see how many I drank, right? Yesterday I woke up, today I woke up with 28.
Oh.
Yesterday I had 27. So you figure out the math. That's all I do.
So you reverse math. You don't count as you go.
I do aftermath.
Aftermath.
Yeah.
I like that. They should teach that. Phil.
What?
Phil, that's really smart.
Well, I'm not, you know, I gotta control myself here because today I gotta go see a doctor to do a couple things and basically I gotta be sober, but whatever. I just cracked my third beer. chilling out, man. I need to cut the edge. My social worker says don't go there drunk.
Yeah. So I'm trying to the doctor, not a good idea. No.
No, I know. So
and don't tell him how much you drink.
Yeah. No, don't tell him how much you drink, Phil.
No, I'm not gonna.
Yeah, it's yeah. Lie.
Yeah, I'm gonna lie.
Casual drinking.
Hey,
and ask for lube.
What?
Like when he. With the fingers, just say, hey, listen, can you put a little...
You could do that by blood work nowadays. If you don't have to get the finger, you can do it by blood
no,
work.
No, I think you're getting a hand up there, Phil.
No. Listen, I'm going to a psychiatrist. This what I'm going for today.
Oh, it's not a... different.
Yeah, I'm...
Okay, but if somebody's looking up your bum at the psychiatrist, then that might be the wrong psychiatrist.
That might be an issue.
Yeah.
I'm not going... No, Phil? He's not... This is a different...
Phil, you got a call. You better take
that. I got a call.
Probably your parole officer.
See ya, Phil.
Okay, take care, bud.
And now...
Oh, my God. I love Phil.
I worry about Phil. He goes hard in the paint.
What I do is I count the beers after I drink them. So if I had 28 and I counted 27...
You know what? I put that out on all my socials. It's up on the Locker Room YouTube page. There's another 2-3 minutes. I had to stop because I didn't want to kill Dean.
Oh my God. I haven't laughed at radio in a very long time. Thank you. In fact, 10 years.
You laugh at these retro replays.
I always laugh at them. Yeah, well, it's because you did a good job, right? It's because you were good at what you did. Like, that's real humor. That's being able to take somebody who just calls in and make them a star because they're just so themselves, so simply themselves, and you don't take anything from them other than that moment, and they willingly give it to you. That's found humor. It takes like a radio fucking genius and legend to grab a caller like that and know that you've got miles of content with that guy just by letting him talk and be that person. So well done, and I would like to get him on the show. That's the other thing. If you can track Phil down, I would like to get an update and see how he's doing on the podcast.
I have his phone number.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think we should do that. I know he doesn't have like a phone or a computer or quote any of that shit.
I'm just wrapping my head around how I would involve him in the podcast.
Well, you would tell him where you are now and ask him how he's doing.
No, I'm just like
get him to give us advice for our lives in the digital world. Same thing. You would just get him to give the same advice only here.
He's not very connected is the issue.
You're going to have him over to your house.
All those calls were on a landline.
Are you serious? Like get plugged into the wall?
He had a landline, but he had one of those Razor flip phones.
Yeah.
So that's
we can do phone numbers here. We don't have to do like video links. We can do a phone link where you can just dial a number and dial in, but that might be hard too. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. We can do all of that here. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll work Zoom on that for sure. By the way, one last thing, because I wanted to mention this. I wanted to get to this. That new Roadhouse, the one on Prime with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor, it's awful. It's so bad.
Don't do it. Don't watch it. Because the original one was pretty shit, too.
No, the original. No, come on.
No, shit. Dude, when you're like 12. And you see,
I went back and watched it. I disagree with you. It's awful. It's a good movie.
It's one of the worst movies ever made.
I always had that movie for some stupid reason had a special place in my heart.
You know what? After we talked about Roadhouse last week, because we talked about Conor McGregor being coked out at the Roadhouse premiere last week, and then you're like, it's the remake of this original. I went back and watched the original Roadhouse like you did that night. And I sat through 45 minutes of it, and I got to the scene where Swayze rips out that guy's throat, and I'm like, I have zero desire to watch any of this anymore. It is so bad. It is so fake. It is so terrible. And I forgot how bad it was, but dude, we didn't have a choice back then. We get like a choice of a million different shows now. So my question to you is, and you need to tell everybody, because if you watched the original Roadhouse when you were dumb and didn't know what entertainment was, and now that you do, is it worth wasting 2 hours on? Yes or no? Okay.
So first off, you and I are not going to agree on the original. I don't know what it was. There was something about that original, and I've rewatched it a couple of times since it came out in 1986 or whatever it was, 84. Mm. Okay. And I loved that movie. I loved that when I was a kid. And I still, like I said, I'm still fond of it. Like I've gone back and rewatched some older movies and gone, wow, what was I thinking? like the original Dune. Like you and I,
oh, it was so bad.
It was brutal. Like the new Dunes are amazing. I went back. I loved the Dune movie when I was a kid. That came out in like 88, 89. And mm-hmm. I thought that, like, I remember loving that movie. And then I went back and watched Porky's is another one.
Yeah. Great movie.
That movie, back then. I remember watching that and thinking that was the greatest thing in the world. And there, you know, the scene in the shop, I have fond memories. And then I went back and rewatched that like 10, 15 years ago. And I'm like, oh my God, that is like one of the worst movies ever made.
No question.
So Roadhouse is not that to me. If you go and watch the new Roadhouse on Prime and you're looking for a reason to watch it, and I can't explain what they did, but they did something very different with the fight scenes. And that to me is the only impressive thing from that movie. Somebody made a good point when I was talking about it on the weekend on Twitter. They were like, you know what, this movie, if they hadn't have said it was another Roadhouse and sort of jigged the script a little bit, I think it wouldn't be perceived as bad as it is because people's fondness for that original movie. But then I said to the guy, I said, and he's like, why would they do that? And I'm like, well, look at all the press they got for remaking Roadhouse and putting Conor McGregor in it, right?
So was he any good in it, by the way?
It was awful. He was god-awful.
Terrible. Yeah. That's what I've heard. I've seen so many reviews of the movie, and none of them are good. But what's worse than the review of the movie is the reverse of Conor McGregor being as shit as he was. And apparently, everybody on set was like, that guy was a fucking train wreck to deal with, too. Like a train wreck. Always coked out, always late,
brutal,
never on time, told people where he preferred to stand instead of standing on his mark. Like he was just that fucked up for the entire filming of the movie, apparently.
But
so that's what you get.
One redeeming thing from the movie, because as soon as he stepped in, it actually, I was like, okay, because he makes it his first appearance like 25, 30 minutes into the movie. And as soon as he does, it's like, oh no, this is a bad movie. And it was actually had some legs. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal, whether you like him or not, I'm not a huge fan. He actually has some chops. So he was making a go of it. But they had some fight scenes, Dean. And maybe if you get a chance to watch it, or somebody that knows more about how they do that shit in Hollywood, I was blown away by the fight scenes and how realistic they made it look. And I read something. Like one of the reviews that I read this weekend talked about how they filmed them, but I don't know enough about film and sort of the intricacies of that to understand what they did, but it was pretty insane. The fight scenes, in my opinion, it looked pretty incredible.
So the fight scenes are worth it. Dude, I'll watch it for the fight scenes, and just know that the movie's going to suck. In fact, I expect it to suck, and I expect the fight scenes to be the best part of the movie.
Which might make it more palatable.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll give it a go. I don't know if I'm going to waste like an hour and a half. Do you ever get in that tenor where you're trying to look for a show or trying to look for something to watch, and you're like, fuck, there's like seven episodes, or this is like a 2.5-hour movie, and there's this panic that sets in. It's like a Netflix panic or a streaming panic where you're like, do I give it that time? Or am I going to be angry after the first episode and a half and go, what the fuck am I doing?
Reacher. I was angry the whole time I watched Reacher.
Yeah, I've seen both seasons. Still angry, and I still watch it.
Yeah, I watch the whole thing.
I watch the whole thing, too, because there's some pretty incredible nudity in it, and there is some graphic killing. Like, same thing. It's like Roadhouse, right? The acting's terrible.
The acting's
some of the
terrible,
killing scenes are incredible.
Some of them are funny too, like how blunt they were about it. Anyway,
okay, all right. Watch Reacher. Have a great day, dude. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. One more quick mention. I know you already gave the plug, but I want to get people to sign up for the Ardent Roof Systems Golf Tournament, charity golf tournament at the Ranch, July 5th. It's the best tournament of the summer in the Edmonton area. And if you go to ardentroofsystems.com, you can register. Stacy and the gang from Arden also looking at sponsors. I'm going to introduce you to a sponsor either this week or next week, a very cool addition to the tournament here on the podcast. I just found out this morning that the title sponsorship went to a really cool local company.
Oh, there. You're kidding. That's awesome. Yeah. So things are moving already for the golf tournament, which is in, I believe, in support of Stollery Children's Hospital.
It's called the Stollery Child Life Program. So Stollery the money Child doesn't go to research or anything. It goes to actually providing services behind the scenes to take the kids' minds off of being in a place where, you know, family's not around 100% of the time, and make them feel like kids, right? Entertainers. They built a beach, music therapy, pet therapy, that kind of stuff. So because of the amount of time that Stacy spent in the Children's Hospital in Ontario, I forget the name of it. That's something that's been very close to, and he spent
Chio
years.
Is the name of the hospital. It's a very famous kids hospital in Ottawa, Chio. Yeah.
Okay. All right, brother.
Thanks, dude. Great to see you.
That was a good one today. Awesome. That was fun.
That was fun. Yeah, light and easy. A little Trumpy, some golf, other shit, hockey. Have a great day. Oilers lost on the weekend, too. That's good. It was a great show.
Two lost. Yeah, they got the Leafs disease. They can't finish.
Whatever. That's all I care about. Have a great day. There you go. Lachlan Cross, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Lach. You can get everything he does at Lachlan Cross on Twitter. Check him out. Also, the Locker Room merch page. You can go and check out some of the stuff he's selling there, including his Save Lachlan Cross t-shirts are very funny. And not done there. You can also download and subscribe to his YouTube channel. Check out the Locker Room Retro Replay of the Day. You can hear it every single day right there. You can also get him at Cryer Media. Go to cryer.co for more details. Brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. As always, our friends at FactCheck have built some disinformation-killing software that kills the disinformation, finds you the origin, and more importantly, tells you who did it. That's why I love this. It tells you who did it, how they took a lie, how they spun a lie, who they gave it to, and how other people perpetrated the same lie. It'll also affirm whether or not you're telling the truth. It doesn't matter what your bias is. This is right down the middle. It is only facts. It is only epistemology. It is only the entire pathology of every claim, everywhere, all at once. Social media, Twitter, Facebook, doesn't matter where that information came from. You pump it into factcheck.io, FACTCHEK.io. And you will get the entire history and all the facts associated and all the sources to help correct the record or confirm that, yes, indeed, what you were looking at is true. Works with pictures, works with videos, works with spoken word. Different versions are coming. Check their beta test right now and sign up to be a verified fact checker and try their program for free. They want you to try and break it. FACTCHEK.io. Again, FACTCHEK.io. Fact-checking needs somebody that has the ability not just to tell you about what you're reading and give you information, but also where to point the finger if that information is incorrect. They will rate and they will absolutely give you value for what you're looking at. It doesn't matter who you are or what it is. It works with URLs, basic questions, with AI, as well as a whole bunch of different inputs that nobody else has. It's all proprietary. It's a team of scientists, a team of data scientists, computer scientists, journalists, lawyers, human rights advocates that want to put that agency back into the hands of the person reading it. When it comes to information, you need to know whether or not you believe. Do you believe? Find out at factcheck.io and join their beta test today. Also brought to you by our friends at CanTorque, Edmonton, Alberta's own CanTorque.com. They make rugged, hardworking torque wrenches, Canada's leading industrial tool experts. Out of the heart of industrial Canada, the beautiful province of Alberta, the good people of Edmonton, they make everything in Edmonton. They make everything in Canada. All their manufacturing happens here. They don't manufacture anywhere else in the world. He goes overseas to sell these products to people who would like to manufacture them there, but he knows about Canadian know-how, Canadian manufacturing being some of the best in the world. He decided to bring everything home a few years ago. He's got a nice little Canadian emblem on every single one of his tools. You can have a look at what they do at CanTorque, including all their products, services, and all their torque wrenches. They're the leading industrial tool experts in Canada. They offer the very best in sales, service, rentals, calibration, maintenance, and custom fabrication of industrial torque tools, bringing you unparalleled expertise, 20 years of experience and knowledge at the table. CanTorque offers a complete range of services, products, making them your one-stop destination for all your bolting needs, heavy machinery, nuclear, railroad, forestry. If you have a torque wrench solution you cannot find one for, they will make it for you. That's how good they are. Any impact socket, any flange, maintenance systems, they ensure optimal performance and peace of mind. Go to CanTorque.com for more information. Also brought to you by our friends at Muse Massage Spa. Emily and Riley have maybe, well, it's not maybe, it is the most high-end spa in the country. country of Canada, here in Toronto. They have visits from people all over the world. Baseball teams come to town. Hockey teams come to town. Basketball teams come to town. Where do they go? I'll tell you where they go. They go to Muse. You know why they go to Muse? To relax. They go to Muse to experience what Emily and Riley call the Muse difference. Muse Massage Spa, these girls are educators, they're sexologists, and they're advocates for the sex work industry. That is exactly what sex work is. It is an industry. It is legal. And Emily and Riley have a podcast where they take you through the world of sex work. They're advocates and sexologists. You can check them out at Muse on the Mic. That is the name of the podcast. They've got a Patreon uncensored version. You can get them on YouTube as well. And of course, at Cryer Media, the home of the Muse on the Mic podcast. And right now they've got a deal for everybody. That is a listener of this show, $50, send them a DM. And you, my friends, yes, you could find yourself in the loving clutches of Emily and Riley walking through your first body house experience. You get to choose your Muse and your treatments, and you get $50 off your first visit. After you subscribe to their podcast, you'll get to know these girls. They're educators, they're entertainers, and more importantly, they're responsible business owners that want to give you the experience of a lifetime. You and your wife, doesn't matter who it is. If there's a therapeutic need in your life for Muse Massage Spa, go there today, musemassagespa.com. And we are brought to you by our friends at Rome. Drive a car on your own terms with a car subscription from Rome. It's where I get my cars, and you should too. Insurance, routine maintenance, roadside assistance, everything is included. The only thing you pay for is fuel, and you start driving. No lease or interest payments, simply pay as you go. Flexible monthly plans starting at 1 month. Home delivery is available. They have valets. They have thousands of happy drivers, including myself, 4.9 stars on Google. You can browse cars. You can check how it works. Do their customer testimonials. They've also got affiliate program that you can sign up for. Listen, when I went to buy a new car, it was almost impossible for me to buy a new car in this mad car and buying atmosphere. Wanted an EV. Wanted to buy something used. Didn't want to have to mitigate the loss off the lot. So I went to my friends in Rome and I said, hey, tell me what you do. And we walked through the process and we became partners with them. That's how much I love what the good people at Rome do. Drive on your own terms with a car subscription. Don't buy. They've got enterprise programs for business. You can browse all your cars. They've got everything from BMWs to Teslas to Hyundais to Fords. Check it out. Rome.auto. Rome.auto. Promo code Rome with Dean. $150 off your first month. You're welcome. Rome.auto, proud partner of the Dean Blundell Show and Cryer Media. Go to cryer.co for more details. Have a great day, everybody. Appreciate you spending some time with us. We will see you tomorrow on this very program. And don't forget, everything we do can be found at Cryer Media. Go to cryer.co for more details. If you're looking to platform your own podcast, get in touch with us. info@cryer.co. Find us there. We love you. You love us. We're one big happy family. Have a wonderful day, folks. We will see you tomorrow. Bye.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Come on, let's go to the Blue Hotel. I wanna live at the Blue Hotel.
The podcast that goes everywhere the imagination dares. It's for the open-minded, the pleasure seeker. It's Jeff Woods with the new podcast about relationships and sexuality. Theme-based with special guests. The Blue Hotel Hotline. And every episode climaxes with an adult bedtime story. Get a room and listen in at the Blue Hotel. Begins Friday, September 23rd.